Names of some community mental health centers have been omitted in respect of privacy. Hi everyone, my name is Sujay Marasetti and welcome to my podcast, Walking Wounded. In this podcast, I explore what likely leads to burnout among mental health professionals in community mental health centers. I reached out to mental health professionals working in the Houston area and a former social worker turned writer to glean what it's like to work in the field. From my search, the three main reasons I found likely leading to burnout in these community mental health agencies or centers were high caseloads, extensive paperwork, and unpaid time to process client trauma. Especially during this current COVID pandemic, the increased caseloads can be pretty challenging for some of these centers. Take Jenny Music, for example.
We have been seeing an increase and a huge influx of individuals calling our programs to get connected to mental health services.
Jenny Music is a clinical team leader at the Harris Center for Mental Health and IDD. For this center, the ongoing COVID pandemic has had a considerable impact on their workload.
Some of these people are brand new. They've never been in our system. And so we actually have developed like a central hotline, so to speak, that people can call and they'll get screened quickly and then be able to be provided an intake with one of our clinics. And then in our department specifically, we have seen with our active clients kind of an increase of individuals who have once been stable, slowly going back into a mental health crisis.
As a clinical team leader, Jenny is both responsible for providing therapy to clients and checking in with her staff members. She thinks that amidst the pandemic, feelings of burnout from the increased workload can start to come up among mental health clinicians.
As a supervisor too, kind of, I try to remind my staff, we have PTO, we encourage you guys to use it for self-care. Because, you know, I remind them too, we're going through a new pandemic that we've never experienced before. So it can be overwhelming. I think it can sometimes be difficult finding that motivation, you know, that drive that you had that came kind of maybe so easily before all this, you know, to really kind of sit down, focus, buckle down and help these individuals, because on some level, we're experiencing the same situations and concerns that they are.
What's interesting to note is that even before the pandemic, high caseloads and productivity requirements were not unheard of for clinicians at community mental health agencies or centers. At least that was the case for Hannah Foshi, a social worker who worked at community mental health centers for the early part of her career.
Certain places that I've worked, they require a certain number of billing hours per week. And so at the beginning of the month, you know, you have, let's say, 200 hours in deficit. And then each week you work off of that deficit. And by the end of the month, hopefully you broke even or you're a little bit over, because then the next month rolls around and it's the same thing over and over. And that was a very big cause of stress for me. There were days where I didn't write any notes. And then it was like the next day, I've got six people scheduled and I have the six notes from yesterday that I wasn't able to get to because I was seeing patients.
The notes that Hannah refers to are a way for grant funding sources to ensure accountability among clinicians and community mental health agencies. However, they're also a burden on the clinician as they have to sometimes spend time outside work to complete them.
It definitely was product oriented, and how much can you churn out? Not so much based on actual relationships. And that's been a main factor in why I have left some places.
Like Hannah, Shivani Seeth also left the community mental health centers at which she worked. Not only that, she left the field as well. As a former social worker, Shivani worked with teens with suicidality and self-harming disorders, and people with severe persistent mental illnesses. Her experiences with paperwork weren't pleasant.
When I used to do Medicaid paperwork, it's 16-page diagnostic assessments for one client. had to be done within 2 hours. That's how long you get. If you take longer than 2 hours, you don't get paid for that. And so your agency wants you to get it done. But for some of these clients, 2 hours is skimming the surface. You know, especially if you've got a long history of family trauma, you're just getting into the meat of it at 2 hours. The idea that you can look at somebody and know exactly what's wrong with them in 2 hours. Like, sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's really not. And sometimes when you get it wrong, it has a huge cost.
The added stressor of more paperwork in addition to notes and their already high caseload is reasonably exhausting for clinicians. Shivani also thinks that framing clinician exhaustion and stress as burnout is only half the story.
Burnout essentially centers the social worker or the mental health worker as a broken tool that needs like tape to fix it, you know, but it doesn't acknowledge how the tool got broken. It doesn't say the pressures that were put on it. It doesn't talk about the productivity hours and the demands.
Shivani touches on a concept that isn't new, unfortunately. Not too long ago, a different term was coined to account for external factors that lead to a caregiver's exhaustion. It's called moral injury. The idea is that clinicians may find distractors like extensive documentation intervening with their ability to provide quality care and be present with their patients. And not being able to provide quality care causes a moral discord followed by stress within clinicians. Since, after all, the patient's well-being should be the sole focus of their career.
When we blame mental health clinicians for their own burnout, we also blame them for the things that happen because they were exhausted. And then they blame themselves. And then it becomes a vicious cycle. And it's not fair. It's not fair to anybody. The clients aren't getting as good a care. The therapists are burnt out. And everybody's frustrated.
Instead of branding clinician burnout as an issue that only needs individual solutions, the term moral injury emphasizes the need to tackle institutional shortcomings that put stress on clinicians as well. However, there's some controversy surrounding the semantics of the descriptors for clinician exhaustion and stress. For the purposes of this episode, I choose to convey that burnout among mental health clinicians isn't just focalized to individual shortcomings. It has institutional roots as well. This perspective of what leads to burnout is crucial when it comes down to community mental health centers.
The problem with them all having to be client-facing hours is that it doesn't acknowledge the amount of reading, research, prep time, you know, like session prep, talking to people not necessarily involved in the case, but who have knowledge, like supervision. Like, it doesn't acknowledge all that time that gets eaten up in being continuing to be a good clinician. And so when we try to make people book things back to back so that there's no wasted time, we don't give people time to recover. We don't give people time to process. Let's say I just did a 2-hour assessment with a client with a huge trauma of sexual assault. And now I have to go work with my kid who's got intense impulse control. Am I gonna be focused? I don't know. Am I gonna still be churning through what I've just heard? Probably. When we look at downtime as wasted time, that's the real nugget of the problem. The idea that social worker and mental health clinician downtime is wasted time. Because downtime is processing time. If we view it as wasted time, then what ends up happening is that processing happens after work, which pushes out social life and work-life balance. So that means you add an additional unpaid hours to work. But then if you are someone who's really like intensely committed to your work, you might feel guilty not doing that time. Or you might feel scared, or something might happen because you can't do that time.
As Shivani mentions, processing time isn't really a choice for a clinician who wants to do their best to help. It's humane to want to reflect upon a client's struggles, but the confines that come with productivity-oriented rules seem to punish those who choose a more involved approach to their care. I would imagine that the unpaid hours for processing clients' trauma would add to feelings of burnout. Hannah also worked at a child abuse protection clinic where she met with children in the foster care system that had been taken from their parents due to violence, drug abuse, or other issues. There, she had a particular experience that was tough to handle, to say the least.
And I remember after the intake, I made it all the way through the intake. I got them out of the building. I told myself I was going to write the note tomorrow because it's the work will always be there. You don't always have to do it right then and there. And I got to my car, I turned my car on, and I just started crying. And I was just like, okay, I let it out, suck it up now, let's go home. So, but it's important to let yourself feel that, to feel the grief and to feel whatever else, the anger or the pure shock of what you've just heard, because you have to let yourself feel it so it doesn't come up in session.
It's not uncommon for clinicians to take a moment or two to just process their client's trauma, yet the extended time beyond the work hours that clinicians put in can be draining. And in this sense, these clinicians walk with a wound, a marked exhaustion resulting from an unhealthy institutional emphasis on productivity. If processing time isn't considered productive, what message is being sent to mental health clinicians?
I was told by other colleagues to, in order to meet productivity requirements, fudge my numbers. And that was the thing I saw of people dealing with stress where they needed breaks but couldn't get them. I never saw anybody do it. I just heard a lot about it and I had occasional advice from people to do it. I never did it because I felt really wrong about it.
This sounds frightening for both the clinician and the client. I would like to think that all who enter the profession do so with a genuine desire to help others. But in such a setting as community mental health centers, clinicians can face demanding productivity requirements. And if these requirements are so unbearable that they can compel some clinicians to fudge numbers, I think it's worth reconsidering institutional rules to effect change. Yet, not all of these community mental health centers share the same stipulations that burden clinicians. Jenny's workplace had set upper limits to the caseload that clinicians acquired.
I will say that in some aspects, we do try to make a caseload reasonable. So what I mean by that is we try to keep therapy, up to 16 to maybe 20 clients. And on our particular division, our chronic consumer, we don't want our staff having more than 16 because we know more than 16, especially if they are really chronic, it's just going to be overwhelming and we won't be able to provide the necessary services that are needed.
At the end of the day, it's difficult to point out a single generalization to all clinicians working in community mental health centers. These centers all don't share the same rules that govern the work of their employees. Some centers are just better off than others. Some positions are better off than others. And again, burnout may not just be determined by the work setting. Some mental health clinicians may just be more experienced or have developed better coping skills. However, what can be said is that institutional characteristics such as high caseloads, extensive paperwork, and unpaid processing time promote a culture of overwork, a culture likely to lead to burnout. This is Sujay Marasetti, and you just listened to Walking Wounded.